Oh, don't you dare be sour. Clap for your world-famous WWE champion and feel the power. Let's go. It's the Big E Pod. Big E has joined us to talk about all things Hawkeyes, Saturday versus Penn State, and being a champ. Time to have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, to the new coolest episode of the podcast that we've ever shown up to. Ever since I was like 8 years old, maybe even younger than that, I've been a huge fan of the WWE. Stone Cold Steve Austin was my first favorite. Then you go to The Rock. Then you go to Cena. And now I got to say, my man who is on the podcast right now is my new favorite WWE superstar of all time. We've got Mr. Money in the Bank turned the WWE heavyweight champion and probably the most electric human being in all of Iowa City on the day that he sent the whole state into an absolute whirlwind. Big E, I couldn't be more excited to have you on the podcast. This is the coolest day ever for us. We love talking to former Hawks, and having the champ, the real champ, on the podcast is unreal. So welcome, and we're happy to have you, man.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you guys so much for having me. You guys obviously doing something pretty cool and pretty special. So it's nice to be a part of that. I appreciate that.
See, this the humbleness, man. It's like that.
That's why the Iowa humility, man. The Iowa football humility.
For real. Yeah, it's a real thing. It's real. Yeah.
And how heavy is that belt, man? Like, oh my God, that looks good.
Yeah, it's so I've held tag team titles before. I've held the Intercontinental Championship, but this one it's a little bit it's got some extra heft to it for sure. And the cool thing is, I got my man who designs our wrestling gear. He's a friend of mine too, Jonathan Davenport. He's incredible. He designed these side plates. Wow. So there's the official. That's my official Big E logo on the title. So it's pretty dope.
Yep, and. Man, we're going to talk about Iowa City a little bit, because you mentioned you don't have time to get back very often. You guys run a crazy schedule. Talk about that life a little bit and your job right now. It is not normal hours. It is not a 9-to-5.
Yeah, no, it's definitely different. So for me, obviously things had calmed down so much with the pandemic where, we were shooting, all of our shows were in Central Florida. So I was able to drive. I live in Tampa right now, Lando Lakes technically, but just outside of Tampa. So things were a lot calmer, but now that we're back on the road, this past week especially was crazy. So we had our TV was in Nashville on Monday. So I was in Nashville on Monday. And then Tuesday I flew home from Nashville to Tampa. I had to do an appearance in Chicago, which if I didn't have the Fury fight, which was incredible, I would have been able to just drive from Chicago Wednesday to head over. But anyways, I was in Chicago for this appearance, randomly ran into, I'm a big UFC fan, ran into Daniel Cormier and Chris Weidman, who are awesome, took pics, and then went from there to Vegas. I had to go to Vegas Thursday to record the Fury Wilder intro. So we did all that. It was awesome.
Electric promo, by the way.
Thank you so much.
God.
Thank you so much, man. That was so much fun. So we did that Thursday. Then Friday morning, I think it was, I'm barely keeping up, flew to Iowa and then met up with the Big Noon Kickoff crew. At one point, I'm losing my mind. So I my first love was college football. Mm-hmm. And we go to this dinner and I'm sitting next to Reggie Bush.
Bush, man. I saw those pictures and I was losing my mind, man. Like Reggie Bush is that dude.
Yeah, yes, still. And that's the thing too, like a lot of the Fox crew were talking about it. And, Reggie's about my age. He's in his mid-30s. And like, he's the one guy who a lot of guys like who are still 18, 19, 20 still resonate with. He's still that dude. Like, even if you didn't grow up like watching him when you were a little bit old, like he's still that guy. So there's at one point Friday, we're in Coralville at Iowa Power River, I think is the name of that restaurant. Yep. Yeah, they're awesome. And we were sitting down and it's Reggie Bush next to me and Matt Leinart, Brady Quinn, just And everyone was so cool. So we do all that. And then obviously everything Saturday in Iowa City. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see all the game and I didn't have Wi-Fi on the plane. So I actually left and it was, we were down 17-3 when I left, because that was the only way I could make the flight. Was getting out of there in time. So they rushed me out of there and I'm thinking, man, it's just not going that well. And who knows? And I'm expecting to open my phone and be real sad when I finally touched down in Vegas. But when I saw everything, so I, you know, afterwards, landing in Vegas, the game was already over and I was losing my mind seeing Iowa City, seeing Kinnick going nuts, seeing, like, it felt like at the end when everyone rushed the field, you couldn't see a blade of grass. No. It's just filled with stints. Like, man, I definitely had FOMO. It was obviously really cool to be at the Fury Wilder fight, but man, I would have loved to be there for the entire game, but what a week indeed.
You mentioned that fight a couple times before we get into the Hawks. How does it feel to be attached to one of the most, now one of the most electric, best heavyweight fights of all time?
That's, for me, is super humbling, because just being a part of it, even if the fight was a stinker, I would have, it's still like, all right, it's still very, very cool. But like you said, what makes it even more special is knowing that it's one of the greatest heavyweight bouts of all time. To see Fury get knocked down two times in one round, and like, it looks like Wilder's about to stage this epic comeback. Man, those guys showed so much heart. It was such an incredible fight. So that makes it more special. And then, like, even being a part of the fact that that Iowa game was such a historic home win, was such an incredible game, and being a small part of that as well. So I just had, like, that's the best Saturday I will ever have.
To be honest, you had your name attached to one of the best and most memorable Hawk games of all time. We already talked about that on this podcast, how it doesn't get any bigger than 3-4 in Kinnick, and a comeback like that, absolutely historic. And then one of the most historic trilogies in the history of sports. And you were at both and tied to both in the same day. And now you're hanging out with us on the podcast and my brain is out of my head. This is unbelievable to me.
No, you guys are crazy. I absolutely love Hawks by a Million is probably my favorite thing. So so I'm all on board. And Tyler, I know you reached out on Twitter and mm-hmm. said something about sending the flag. So I said, I got to DM you. I got to hit you up just to let you know, I'm a fan of what you guys are doing, and salute to you. So thanks for having me on.
Oh God. I woke up to it's similar for you because you're now in this position where you're on. I mean, dude, you were made for this. You realize that, right?
Yeah. So it's funny because especially everyone who knew me and played with me, I was such a quiet, introverted kid, right, even in college. But I love this. Like, I really have grown to love performing and doing voiceover stuff, doing intros. Like, this is the stuff that I love doing. So for me, getting back to Iowa City, getting to put on the overalls that thankfully I didn't get his name, but some giant kid they just found who was at Big Noon kickoff. They said, hey, can we borrow your overalls? He was more than gracious. So we took pictures of him. I signed his overalls for him too. But like that, this is my wheelhouse, getting to be a goofball and getting to be a part of, be a part of such a massive game, to be a part of my alma mater is such, like, that just fills my soul so much. And I think what makes it extra special for me too is, I got to Iowa City, 17 years ago, mm-hmm. and it's the same head coach. The head strength coach, Ray, was our assistant strength coach, a friend of mine. Paul Federici reached out. Paul put me through all my rehab stuff years ago. So just, the DC, Phil Parker came down to my high school in 2004. And the reason I even got to Iowa was so my senior year, my whole story, I feel like, is crazy because I was done. I only played 1 year of high school football, like 5'11". I played at about 235 trying to be a defensive tackle. That should never happen. But, Phil ends up walking in because our coach's office is attached to our weight room at Wharton, the high school I went to. And he had to go through the weight room to get to the coach's office to talk to my coach. And he walked in. I was doing a set of 315 for 10 on bench. He saw
in high school?
yeah. I was getting it early. I was getting it from a young age.
Oh, my Lord.
But even like, man, it's just crazy to think, like, what if I hadn't been there that day? What if I had been doing something else? What if I was like wearing baggy clothes and didn't look as impressive?
And so he offered you that day, or did he go and say, let me see this kid's film? And then you had.
Yeah. So we went for.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, you weren't like, talk about, we had no stars. Like, you didn't have any stars either. Like, 1 year, no one knew who you were
at all. I was a complete nobody. I was like all county. That was it. But I didn't have the name recognition at all. And I was at a small school. It's a 5A school, you know, a bigger school, but we didn't have a great year, so I didn't have a ton of attention. But my story to me is even crazier, because so Phil walks in, sees me, I think he talks to my coach about me. We get him some game tape. But really what sunk it for me was my defensive line coach in high school was an incredible man who was like a mentor to me. He's family to me, Vincent Davis. And he happened to play for Tarkio College many moons ago. And his defensive line coach was the Iowa defensive line coach at the time, Ron Aiken. Wow. So because, like, you know, for them to take a flyer on me and bet on me was only really because my defensive line coach in high school played for Ron Aiken. And like, he trusted his word. He trusted Vincent. So it's such a, like, life is so wild, because, you know, the fact that I ended up in Iowa after, you know, being way undersized, not having the recognition and everything, and just having these relationships that, you know, I had no idea. Yeah, I had no idea that, you know, Vincent played for Ron. So it's just the way I got to Iowa, the way I got to WWE, and everything being able to come back to Iowa City, everything feels so incredibly full circle for me.
Yeah. Where I was going with that originally was, you're in this, in the whole you being made for this, is you now live on this very public stage, almost a million followers on Twitter, all the stuff, right? And on a much, much lower level, but more than the average person, Drake and I experienced this similar stage and platform because of what Iowa had done for us, right? It's why this podcast is a little bit more popular than an average Joe who would be talking about the Hawkeyes, is because we got to actually play and we're maybe like slightly famous in Iowa, but you're like completely famous. So when you sent me a DM that morning and I'm waking up in Cedar Rapids after doing the post game show, I turned to my wife and I said, holy shit, guess who just DM'd me? And your flag is on the way. It'll be there Friday.
I appreciate that.
We can't wait for you to fly it. Those things, when you gave the Hawks by a million on the thing, first of all, just like a perfect promo. Again, you're just made for it. But the pop you got and everything, it just, my phone broke when that happened. So you were a wrestling high school champion, correct?
Yeah. So I wrestled at the reason I only played 1 year high school football, like, football is my first love. But my parents had me go to a prep school called Tampa Prep, a great school in downtown Tampa, but they don't have a football team. Right. So I was there from 6th through 11th grade. And for me, I was like, all right, what's the next most physical thing I can do? And that was wrestling. So I started wrestling in 7th grade, and it took me a while to get good at it. But yeah, I won a state championship at 215 pounds my junior year of high school.
I was going to say, how impossible were you to take down? Because being that you could bench 315 10 times, and I know you weren't skipping leg day, that means that you were a 500 or 600 pound squatter in high school, which, like, no high school kid can shoot a single or a double and get in on your hips. You're just too damn strong.
Yeah, I was definitely, yeah, I was squatting low 600s in high school. So yeah, I was taken down. I actually wrestled a kid named Rashad Goff, who's about my age, really, really good. He was one win away from being an All-American at Cleveland State. So he ended up beating me that year. And then I think it was like 45-2
wow,
or something that year.
That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, yeah.
Before Phil Parker walks into Wharton, what is Etor's future look like? Like, what was going to happen? Did you consider wrestling in college, or what was the plan?
So for me, I was lucky enough to do well on my PSATs, and in Florida, I think it's called the Bright Future Scholarship. But anyways, I had some academic money.
Okay.
And I had a full ride to like an in-state school. So my plan was to go to Florida and hopefully just walk on and give it a shot from there.
Okay.
I had a very loose plan to hopefully just walk on. But I didn't really have a connection with the program to be a preferred walk-on. That was just my very loose goal. And then I also, like, USF wanted me to walk on as well. And at the time, they weren't a very good program.
Yeah.
UCF as well. So I thought about some local schools, but I was just going to kind of wing it and go from there.
Took the chance on Iowa, and obviously the rest is history. You redshirted in 2004. which was a pretty decent year in Iowa City. What do you remember from the time you took a chance on Iowa City, the black and gold? You come in, I mean, I've got your recruiting class that you came in with up here. There's some dudes now like Andy Brodell, Charles Godfrey, Bradley Fletcher, Sean Green, Mitch King, Matt Kroll. I mean, you guys had a class, my guy. Like, what do you remember from like campus freshman year Iowa City?
Well, I always think of, especially early on, I tend to think of my time at Iowa as the best of times and the worst of times. And the worst mm-hmm. of times was just because of all the injuries. You know, it didn't take long. I got there during the summer. Workouts went well. And I got to a point, and you never know how things work out, but I got to a point where, you know, in camp, I had a conversation with Coach Aiken, and it was, hey, we're thinking about not redshirting you this year and getting to play. And mind you, Jonathan Babineau, who played over a decade with the Falcons,
yep.
Started. He was a starter then. Matt Roth, D-Rob was the yep. other end. Like, that was a really good defensive line. The front seven, too. Chad Greenway, Abdul Hodge. So, man, I was just really excited about the prospect of getting to play. I obviously wasn't being, you know, promised a starting spot or anything, but an opportunity to play on that stack team would have been awesome. Then, you know, shortly thereafter, I ended up tearing my ACL. So, for me, I loved my time there. I was there with Coach Doyle in those summer workouts. And things were going well. And I kind of want to backtrack a little bit when you talk about taking a chance on Iowa City. I feel like on Iowa, I feel like Iowa definitely took a chance on me for a guy sure. who's super undersized, only played a year. Mind you, I think Iowa was number 8 in the country
yep.
The year before. Robert Gallery was just drafted number 2 overall. My defensive line coach, Ron Aiken, and I think I just won like assistant coach of the year okay. a year or two prior. So it was a no-brainer. Coach Doyle and that strength staff was considered one of the best in the country. But yeah, you know, everything, my time there was awesome besides the fact that I had these just really devastating injuries.
Yeah. And so your career was redshirted in 04, hurt in 05, and then you played a little in 06, correct?
Yep. So I had was able to play in every regular season game. So we had a defensive line rotation. But yeah, Mitch King and Matt Kroll, I got to see both this past weekend. They were both the starters then and kind of played behind them coming off the two ACLs. I also tore my pec during spring ball.
Jesus.
The year prior. So I was just a mess, an absolute mess. But I was fortunate. I got to play in every game that season until the Alamo Bowl. During bowl prep, I broke my kneecap, my patella.
There was God.
3 inches of space between halves of my patella, tore my patella tendon too. And I said, you know what? I think this football thing might not be for me. And that was it for me.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it had anything to do with you being actually too strong for some parts of your body, whether it be your tendons got too strong or your muscles got too strong for the tendons, you know, just because you were absolutely outrageously strong and then you were trying to be explosive in a football sense and the sheer force you were putting on those I guess breaking points was just too much?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. I also, for some reason, and I can do the splits pretty easily without even warming up. Wow. So I was also told that having pretty lax hamstrings contributes to ACL instability as well. So I think that was a contributing factor as well. So we were trying to figure out what the deal was, but it's probably a combination of the two.
Yeah. That's a big pec to tear, by the way.
yes, it
my
is.
God.
Like, did it clean tear?
It was a clean tear. So thankfully, like, surgery was not that difficult. They were able to like pretty easily attach it. So right now, I think with, I don't know how it still is, but you can kind of see if I flex my pec, shirtless.
There's a little hole in there.
Not the hole. It's actually the pec itself is fine and full, but the bicep tendon kind of, you can see it drops down a little bit, especially when it's flexed. You can see the bicep tendon on the left side. But other than that, man, I was able, you know, after all the injuries and everything, I thought, man, I'm never going to be as strong as I once was. But thankfully, like, all the credit in the world to Paul Federici and his rehab team. I feel like I spent way more time with Paul than anyone else, just with all the rehabs and everything. But my body feels great now. I went from, I think at Iowa, I think I might have been benching in the high fours And, you know, a few years later, I was able to, 575 was my best bench years later. So my,
we just watched that video, dude, the video of you getting spotted by Roman Reigns, getting hyped by John Cena. Yeah. Holy shit, dude. You had to feel the most adrenaline that you felt in a long time before you're about to do that.
That was crazy too. And John, mind you, at the time, I'm still in FCW. No one knows who I am. I'm not on TV. I'm still trying to work my way up. So John tells me he has this massive match with The Rock at WrestleMania, and it's being billed as once in a lifetime. This is the first one. They did a second one. So it's once in a lifetime, but we're going to do it again later. But anyway,
of course.
So he tells me, all right, this is going to be, if you hit this bench, it will be in this video package for my match with The Rock. And at the time, like, that's a big deal to get that kind of exposure, to be on, yep, whether it was USA or whatever, wherever it aired. It was a big deal. So, you know, I'm as amped as I can be, but having all the boys around, you know, guys that I trained with for years, all around supporting me, hyping me up, having John like dap me up afterwards, that was a pretty incredible moment. But yeah, 575, that was the best bench I ever hit too. I thought, oh, one day I'll hit 600. I'll blow this out of the water. That was the best bench day I ever had in my life and ever will have in my life.
In the Iowa cutoff too.
The thing that makes it even more impressive is that you did, like, there's bench pressing and then there's kind of like cheater pressing, right? Where that last couple inches get slack and then all of a sudden that butt comes off to get that little pop off your chest so that you can get the first 6 inches and then let your body take over. You controlled the weight the whole way with no wrist wraps. And what in the hell are you made out of?
I used to, mind you, I can't do any of that anymore. I was probably at my heaviest and my strongest. I was probably, at that time, I was probably at least 310 pounds. 317 was my heaviest. Right now, I'm about 250 to 240. I've dipped into the high 240s lately too. So I can't do anywhere lean close to that. Right. But I'll take it. It did happen. And thank God it's on film, because otherwise I would think like, did I dream that up? Is that a real thing? But no, it actually happened.
That's forever now. In that gap, so you finish college, you're done with football. And now there's this gap of 2007 to 2009 where you actually got into powerlifting. Obviously all of that lifting, you won USA Nationals. I know it's on here. You won the Open Powerlifting Championships, National Powerlifting Championships. And then how on earth, like, does someone just call and say, yo, I think you should get into the depth, like into some professional wrestling? Cause it seems like that's what, cause our guy Manders, who you know,
of course,
and who is an absolute legend, he is cutting his teeth all over the country right now in indie spots.
He's doing a true, true grind for his dream.
And he loves
that. What he's doing, putting in tens of thousands of miles, driving all around the country to gigs with not that many people showing up, it's inspiring to even a thing like us, where we didn't have that many viewers at the beginning, and you just have to keep doing it because you believe in it. And that's what that guy's doing, man. And it's inspiring as hell.
Yeah, no, definitely. Salute to Steve for sure for doing that. Yeah. And he's good, man. I had that opportunity to watch a couple of his matches, just stuff on YouTube, man. He's doing a good job. He trained with Seth Rollins, who's, from Iowa, from Davenport, and you can't ask to train with a better pro wrestler. He's incredible. Yep. But yeah, going back to your point, so actually there's a bit of a common like misconception. So I didn't start my powerlifting until I was signed with WWE.
Oh, really?
So yeah, that was 2010, 2011. So I was still training in FCW. But so again, another story of like, I feel like whether you want to call it God or the universe or energies, whatever it is that led me that way. So what was happening at the time is, so I was still on campus. Coach Doyle was still letting me come into the facility and work out. And so this was probably, you know, right after my playing days. So I finished up, I stayed on campus after my redshirt sophomore year. And I was still finishing up my undergrad degree. I took a medical hardship. And thankfully, you know, they don't have to, but they honored my scholarship and let me stay on campus to finish out. So I was still around, but I was still, you know, the nice part with, you know, especially, you know, I've talked in some interviews recently about the toll that all the injuries and not being a part of the program really took on me. And that's the big thing. You know, you kind of, for me, I felt like I lost a sense of brotherhood and being around the team, being in the locker room. And that bond is just suddenly gone when you're not on the team anymore. And thankfully, you know, Coach Doyle letting me stay around helped me to stay, had that, you know, I felt more connected to the program. I felt like I still had that sense of family. So I was still around. I was still working out. You know, guys, he would let me know when the team would be in there. And then when the weight room was empty, I would go in and train and, you know, just talk to Coach Doyle for a little bit and end up leaving and doing, you know, going about my business. So at the time, Mike Humpel, mm-hmm. who I played with, incredible human being, a great dude. He was drafted by the Steelers, but he ended up having neck issues. So he was back on campus and he's friends with another incredible human being who I have to take my hat off to forever, Mike Doherty. And Mike is connected with the Iowa wrestling program, friends with Dan Gable. So Mike Doherty was randomly on two flights with Jim Ross, and Jim Ross was with WWE at the time. One of the greatest, you know, wrestling commentators of all time.
He's a Hall of Famer, yeah. Correct? Yes. Jim Ross, yes, is a WWE Hall of Fame.
I believe if he's not, he should be. Yeah, he's. So Mike Doherty ended up bumping into him. So I think Doherty was wearing either an Iowa hat or an Iowa shirt or something. And, you know, JR, I think, was familiar with this, just obviously the legacy of the Iowa wrestling program, you know, you could talk about forever. So, you know, the plan was, you know, after they had that talk, was for JR told Mike, you know, hey, if there are any guys who are done with their Iowa wrestling, you know, done with their careers wrestling at Iowa, you know, you could possibly send them my way and see if they might be interested in starting professional wrestling. Because, you know, wrestlers, amateur wrestlers, especially elite amateur wrestlers, tend to take to our business so quickly, man. They seem to really get it. So because the Mikes were friends, Mike Doherty and Mike Humpel, I think they just ended up having a conversation at one point. And, you know, Mike Humpel threw out my name as a possibility, you know, someone who might be interested in this. And then the next time we were in the weight room together, he just said, hey, there's possibly maybe an opportunity with WWE if you might be interested. So he just talked to me and engaged my interest, and there was no guarantees or anything. He wasn't saying, you know, this is in the bag, but the process was essentially, you know, just send them some, I remember awkwardly taking some pictures in just shorts because they want to have an idea of what my physique looked like. So I'm just taking these awkward half naked pictures, sending to some stranger in WWE. And they liked them enough to send me down to Tampa for a tryout. And then when I found that out, like, so much of this feels like it was meant to be. It sure feels like some larger entity is connecting these dots, because, you know, Tampa's where I'm born and raised. My parents have a house here. So I thought, you know what, if I am horrible at this and they fire me in 3 months, I can just stay with my parents. I talked to the people at Iowa, and I was actually in grad school at the time. I was a TA, but it also worked out that this was during the summer, so I didn't have any commitments. It's not like I had to leave my duties or anything. And they let me know, hey, if this fails and it doesn't work out for you, you can always come back, but your credits expire in 10 years. And I thought, all right, 10 years, that's fine. I'll be back before 10 years, whatever. Mind you, it's been 12 years later. Those credits are out the window, and I have to start my grad school stuff all over again. But so I thought, when I found out, you know, FCW was in Tampa, I thought, man, it just feels like this is meant to be, because I have this safety net. Like, things go awry, stay with my parents for a little bit, go back to Iowa, and I'll just, you know, I'll go back to my plan, which was to finish up my master's, probably start a PhD, and then get into an athletic department. I wanted to be an AD. I always love sports. I just wanted to be around athletes and help athletes. So that's how I stumbled into WWE. Thankfully, my tryout in Tampa went well enough. I was there for 4 or 5 days, about a week, a little less than a week. And then I was just kind of spent the next few weeks just by my phone waiting for that text or call that, hey, we want you to come down and sign you. So yeah, that was 2009, and what a wild ride it's been.
And in 2009, it was FCW. Now it's known as NXT, which, for those listening who are maybe just Iowa football fans, aren't really big into professional wrestling, that's like AAA ball in professional baseball, or like the G League for NBA. You spend 3 years there. It changes into NXT. And I just watched all the debuts. Biggie Langston, like, you literally, your debut, your theme, you've got like plates. It's like a loaded barbell. It's so sick. And then in 2014, or you're brought to the main roster. And then in 2014, you debut as the New Day with Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. Dude, the coolest. And you probably felt like you had your brotherhood back at this point. Like, you found it. It's like, And it's been so cool to watch. I'm not just some guy. Like, I've got Bootios.
There it is.
I Christmas. I got Big E on the t-shirt eating cereal. Like, watching the New Day perform, dude, is one of the coolest things. And you guys got to do some crazy things. The whole theme, the pancakes, Xavier with the trombone, coming out of a giant cereal box at WrestleMania. Longest tag team reign in WWE history. Like, what a story.
Yeah, man. And you're completely right when you talk about that brotherhood, because I could say without a shadow of a doubt, I love those two men, man. We've been through so much. Our time together, 2014, we've had so much success, but we were off to a rocky start, honestly. You know, just being told no so many times, mm-hmm. You know, people laughing at us for wanting to get this group together. But, you know, all that just made our bonds even tighter. We just grew closer because we felt like we believed so much in our chemistry. We realized very quickly that the three of us, you know, we saw the business much the same. We just had a very similar vision, like right out the gate. And so we just believed in ourselves. And I love those guys. We root for each other in the ring, outside of the ring. You know, I met their family so many times. We broke bread together and they feel like family too. That's my extended family. So those guys are incredible human beings. And like you said, man, we've got to do some incredible things. So when I first started wrestling, I always wanted to be serious. I love Goldberg. I love Ron Simmons. Oh. I love Vader. Just these guys who are massive and mean and larger than life. So that's what I wanted to be. So that was my early career.
Yeah.
And then you look, you know, fast forward a few years and I'm wearing this phallic unicorn horn on my head and I'm wearing these bright colors and doing splits in the ring and throwing out pancakes. But I really got to find my niche and my wheelhouse as this big goofy guy who just enjoys having fun. But also, you know, when the time is right, like there's also, I always wanted to have that intensity in the ring when need be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've had the opportunity to do so many incredible things. We have a real cereal. People still ask, you can go to, for some reason, it's at FYE, which sells, you know, records and whatnot, but we have a cereal that you can go buy at FYE or FYE.com. Stupid. It's called Bootios. Yes, it's absurd. But yeah, we've been able to do some absolutely incredible things. Man, we have a, for anyone, I'm weird about watching myself, so I haven't checked it out, but I've heard a lot of positive things. We have a Netflix special with The Undertaker. It's called Escape the Undertaker that came out October 5th.
Okay.
You can go watch that. It's for, you know, for Halloween and just in time for that. But yeah, man, it's been such an incredible ride to think back to when my playing days were over. I was 20 years old, thinking that was it for me, trying to find my place in the world, just kind of in many ways feeling lost and purposeless. And now I feel like my life is so full. I feel like I get the opportunity to do so many incredible things. You know, even getting back to Iowa City, and I told people there, you know, when we were rushed to leave the stadium at the end, so there are a few people that I didn't take pics with. But other than that, I tried to take pics with everyone who asked. I tried my best because I am so grateful and humbled by the fact that I now get to go back to my alma mater, and I'm like, you know, I'm celebrated in a way, you know, it feels like a real homecoming. And I just absolutely love, like, that's my second home. You know, I'm born and raised in Tampa. I still live here in this area, but that's my second home. And I love the people of Iowa, that community in Iowa City, in that area. Man, so many incredible human beings. And some of my very best friends, I got to shout out my people, my best friends in the world. Some of my very best friends are guys that I lived in a house with. We have a text group. We talk pretty much every single day. I met these guys, you know, 17 years ago, Mike Sabers, Rashad Dunn, Lucas Cox. I saw Luke, we had a house show about a month ago, you know, close to where he lives in South Carolina. Got to see him and his beautiful family. I got to see, obviously, Mike Sabers lives in Solon. Got to see him. We went to the game together. Right before we ended up, we started this, I played an hour with Rashad. We play UFC in the morning. but man, like, as you guys, I'm sure you know, like, the bonds that you make in Iowa City, in that program, like, for me, and no judgment for anyone who joined a frat or anything, I didn't feel like I needed to, because that was my,
you were in the coolest frat on campus, dude. That's what we referred to ourselves as, was the coolest and best frat on campus. The most exclusive too, because you can't just walk up there with some of your daddy's money and be like, "Hey, I wanna be in your fraternity." You gotta earn your spot in the fraternity. You gotta earn it in blood, sweat, and tears. So that's what makes it just better than any other fraternity.
Exactly.
But what I was gonna ask you, when you were talking about how great it feels to be able to come back and just be like, feel like you're at home, do we get to see you at the Big Ten Championship? So be the Hawks make it.
That is my goal. Like, I am trying to, first of all, if I can get plugged into anything Iowa related as much as possible. I know it obviously will depend on our schedule and what we're doing. The nice part is now that I'm on Raw, I think it allows me a little bit more flexibility. Because the problem is, if I was on SmackDown, I'd have to try to scramble the front. You know, we're on Fridays. SmackDown's on Fridays, which I was just on for like the last 4 years. So that would make it a little bit more difficult. But I think now that I'm on Raw on Mondays, I think we can make that happen. So I'm praying that the Hawks do get to the Big Ten title game. And in my mind, if that happens, I'm there. I'm there, no question. So, yeah, I can't wait.
We're there, too. We already have our stuff booked, and we're going to get a tailgate together. So you got to stop by the tailgate if we'll have a good old time.
That'd be
100%. I'm there, 100%.
And the H-band flags will be flying. That belt that you guys see on the YouTube version, if you are watching, which you should – he's been holding it the whole time. You really don't have to keep it up there on the shoulder, but I know it's nice and shiny. A month ago today, you cashed in money in the bank on Bobby Lashley and became the WWE champion. Say what you want about, you know, people, pro wrestling, how they feel about it, making it to that stage and being the champion. What are the emotions as you stand there in the ring and the belt's yours? I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah, man, that's incredible. And I tell my friends and whatnot, like, man, I hope everyone in your own field or craft or whatever it is, I wish I could bottle that feeling up and give to anyone, because it's incredible. And what you know, being a WWE champion in and of itself is obviously a mind-blowing moment. But, you know, what really made it special for me is the outpouring of love. Everyone was so kind to hear from my peers, from fans, from everyone who reached out and said so many kind things. You know, I was checking my phone, you know, beforehand, and I go to do my business and come back afterwards, and I have 144 missed texts, not to mention just all the DMs and everything else. And the texts and the calls just kept coming for like the next 3 days. So that's what really makes it special, is knowing and feeling like you did something right. Because I've been with this company for 12 years now, and as proud as I am of this singular moment of becoming WWE champion, I was also just very, very proud of everything we've done as the New Day. You know, we were named by WWE as the greatest tag team of all time, and whether you agree or you don't, and I get why people want to pick their childhood favorites, and I get, you know, nostalgia is a huge part of wrestling. You might not see us as your number one, but the fact that I always look back to our roots, and I think back to three guys who were had doors slammed in their faces, who were told no, but because we were persistent and believed in ourselves, like, to think that, man, thank God that we decided to stay the course, because we were able to do so many wildly incredible things. And I'm so grateful for that. So for me, I thought, you know,
that's that walk-on mentality right there. That's what this podcast is based off of, dude. We were three guys who were told no a whole lot of times, and we still showed up in Iowa City and just said, well, fuck it. Let's see where this goes.
Right. And that's, man, that's so many successful stories are of people like that. That is such a common refrain, is people who are told no or laughed at or told like, this way doesn't work. You need to do things the way that everyone else had done them before. But like, getting to forge your own path, your own way, that to me is what makes it so special too, is becoming WWE champion. Yep. It's because there's so many people who want me to be serious again, or they want me to, you know, get in like dark colors, whatever it is. But I just believe I got to stay the course. I trust in myself as that barometer. And I think when you do things, if your goal is fame or fortune, and that's the reason you get into it, I feel like you're either eventually going to get burned out, or someone is going to push you off your course. But if you're doing it for all the right reasons, and you love the people you work with, and like the bond you guys have, if that's real, like, man, it might not be easy at the beginning. I'm sure like it's not easy. I know like the amount of work it goes into, like, people don't realize, like, if you like having a successful YouTube show or podcast, it's work. It's not easy. And it's like, it takes time to get off the ground, but like, you guys clearly believe in what you're doing. You know, it seems like you guys have a clear bond between each other. There's real love there. So man, like keep going, just keep going. And when you love what you do, it's not work. Even when it's hard, it's not work. So that's the lesson that I've been able to learn in my life is I learned to get out of my own way. Cause I'm someone who I'm not brimming with the most self-confidence. I'm not, you know, I've always been, you know, I was someone who didn't, you know, struggle with depression, like self-loathing, all these insecurities. And I just eventually learned to like, man, don't be your own obstacle. Just get out of your way. Just take the leap. And I'm so glad I learned that lesson.
It's a really great lesson. Couple more minutes here before we let you go. Some quicker questions. George Kittle, obviously NFL superstar, loves the WWE, huge Seth Rollins fan. They've done a bunch of stuff together. Have you ever met George?
Yeah. So actually George, I've met him a couple of times. He was at a show of ours. I'm assuming it was in the Bay Area. And I remember seeing him in the crowd. As soon as our match is over, someone actually reminded me of this. I run over and jump into his arms. So we actually got this on TV. I can't remember when it was. I think it was pre-pandemic.
He's been to a couple of WrestleManias. It could have been, I think he went to a WrestleMania in the Bay.
Yeah, so it wasn't WrestleMania because I know WrestleMania would have been way too crazy. I think it was a SmackDown. I can't remember when it was. But yeah, he's at shows, I think, as often as he can be.
He might have a little future in WWE if he wants it because he's a character.
Oh my God. Yeah, he's perfect for it. He definitely is a character. He knows how to be an entertainer. Yeah, he would make a very easy and seamless crossover.
Yeah.
To WWE.
And he's
all right. Who do you think his persona would be most like of somebody either past or present?
I probably like a bit of a Stone Cold, I could see. Just a guy, just an ass kicker who does what he wants, who is anti-authority. I could see that. That's Kittle.
I'd call if I had that question, I'd tell George to his face that he's Enzo Amore.
Enzo was super over, by the way. So no shame in that.
Oh, dude, Enzo's actually like one of my favorites ever. Okay. You have a podcast yourself with the New Day, and I actually listened to some of your mental health episode right before we did this. So it's cool that you brought that around too. And so anyone who's interested in listening to more of Big E, go check that out or follow him on social media. Bigger pop, Swarm in a big time game or WrestleMania? It's gotta be WrestleMania, dude. It's so huge.
Oh man. How do you pick against a Swarm though?
I know, right?
It's hard to say. Let's call it probably. It is different. Let's call it a tie. So I think for me, one of the cool things is I absolutely love being a part of the program, but it is a little bit different. You know, WrestleMania, when you go out there and people are chanting Big E, like right. My experience would be different. I never got that experience at Iowa where I was like the guy or got to make a big play. I was never a star there. So it's hard for me to say because I've been able, you know, fortunately, on the WWE side, I've been able to have, you know, much greater success. So I never got to be, you know, Mitch King was the star of the defensive line when I was there. I was never anything close to what Mitch was. But, man, I don't know how you beat being in Kinnick for a game that big. Especially when we're that good and you're up against an incredible Penn State team. That atmosphere on Saturday is one of the best atmospheres I've ever been able to be a part of. Like that, I'm just like reliving it right now in my head, mm-hmm. and I'm getting goosebumps, man. It's just like that's I don't know how you ever top that, man. Iowa City was absolutely electric.
Yeah. Biggest, this is my last one, and then Drake, you can go. Biggest crossover between Division I football and the dedication, the lifestyle of that, and being a professional wrestler.
I think for me, what I was able to really take from my time at Iowa was the work, like being able to do the work without making excuses. Like that's what really taught me. There's so many things about wrestling that are different. I think getting through a camp, like a fall camp like that, I don't know if I'll ever do anything harder than that physically. Yeah, like that, especially when we were doing 2 days, things have changed a little bit now. But like, man, that used to be rough. But wrestling is more of like, I don't have a single day that physically intense, but wrestling is such a daily and weekly grind. Like we don't have a moment of real respite. Honestly, I was just on the road for a week. I'm home a little bit now. I have about three and a half days at home, but even every day at home, like I'm doing media. I got two more things of media today. I'll wake up tomorrow. I got three more things. So even when I'm home, like I'm still working and I still have to get to the gym. I still have my responsibilities at home, paying bills. So it's just more of a regular and daily grind. But in the same vein, man, I've spent 12 years in WWE. I probably don't have another 12 years of wrestling in me. So I'm just trying to do my best to enjoy it and to embrace it and to smell those roses a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Drake, you got anything?
I guess one of my questions would be, talk about the fulfillment of what it feels like to just reach the pinnacle and see all of your hard work pay off, because I feel like that's kind of a big fundamental basis of this podcast, is just absolutely working until your goals become your realities, if it's possible. And so I don't know. I just feel like you have a pretty unique perspective on that.
Yeah, for me, man, I don't feel like I had any instant success ever in my life. You know, there are times where it took a long time to have my payoff. You know, there are times in FCW where, you know, I'm only making $500 a week, you know, not making a king's ransom by any means. And, you know, there are times where we would have these shows and, you know, Seth Rollins had worked on the independent scene forever. Like he was a guy when he got signed by WWE who was pretty much ready to go on the main roster right away. I came in with zero experience, so I needed the time. And it took me three and a half years of being in FCW and working on a regular basis to get to the main roster. So it took time to get to the main roster. And even then, it took me time to get better and better. But that's really just been the enduring lesson for me. And I think a lot of people are too focused on just getting to that goal. And I try to encourage anyone who's getting into wrestling or whatever it is. Like, I know trust the process is said ad nauseum, and sometimes, you know, things like that lose their meaning and they sound cliche. But like, in learning to enjoy that process and enjoy the grind, enjoy getting up at 5 a.m. and doing the work, that's a huge part. Because if you're only focused on the end game, whether that be fame, fortune, whatever, like that is not the route to happiness or real meaningful success. Is you have to enjoy the work. You have to enjoy seeing the improvement. And that's what I've tried to do in my life and in my job, is just take a step forward every single day in my personal life, in my professional life, even if it's the tiniest of steps, is just do your best to make progress every single day. And I learned, like, the weight room for me was not work. I learned to love the weight room. I learned to love doing speed work. I learned to my best to enjoy the work, and thank God it pays off. It does. For me, I honestly believe, I think I'm just a guy. I think I'm just a man, and I'm really fortunate. I don't think I have any, you know, certainly genetically, you know, I took to the weights and those muscles, it didn't take long for them to start growing. So I get that I do definitely have some genetic advantages. But for me, you know, other than that, man, I just feel like a guy who was extremely blessed, and I was just around the right people who helped to elevate me forward. You know, no one does this on an island. No one gets to any kind of success on their own. And I'm just so grateful that I had the right people in my life to help propel me forward. And I feel blessed, man. And I feel like I've gotten to a really good place in my life. And I'm so thankful.
Man, well, I hope the fans enjoy this episode. Everybody listening, we are so thankful that you spent time with us. We feel incredible joy to share that Hawkeye brotherhood with you. And it has been fun as hell to watch you go from Iowa to now a professional wrestling career in the spotlight. The Big E podcast, baby. Wash Up Walk-Ons episode, whatever. It's going to be placed in here somewhere. Hopefully it adds to the hype of this season. And maybe we and some of you guys will see Big E at the Big Ten Championship if everything works out correctly.
I was just about to say, man, this conversation's been electric and it was awesome as we expected, and we hope to see you in Indy.
I appreciate it, man. You guys are incredible. All the success to you guys, and hopefully I do see you very, very soon. But man, just feeling connected to this program, and just I feel completely caught up in the excitement of the season, and I'm grateful for you two for having me on. So I appreciate that.
So amazing. Hawks by a million. We'll talk to you guys next time. Peace.